I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, Rob, you're thinking about dinosaurs.
Right.
What image pops into your head?
I'm probably like a lot of folks, you know, a T-Rex, maybe a brontosaurus, you know, submerged in a lake.
So predictable, Ferret.
Yeah. Well, you, what about you?
Same thing.
Yeah. Predictable.
Well, our next guest says science has actually learned a lot more from less famous dinosaurs. He calls them the unsung heroes of the dinosaur world.
Brian Sweetek is with us now. He's a science writer and blogger. He's the author of My Beloved Brontosaurus, On the Road with Old Bones, New Science, and Our Favorite Dinosaurs. We've got an article he wrote linked on our Facebook page. Brian, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
So first, how did T-Rex get to be the rock star of the dinosaur world?
Well, in a way, it sort of was from the very beginning. I mean, first of all, Tyrannosaurus Rex, that would be one of the best names ever coined in the history of science. It's incredibly evocative. But it was named in 1905 by Henry Fairfield Osborne. The following year, the American Museum of Natural History was starting to put up a second skeleton. The second one is a more complete one that had been found in Montana. They only had the hips and the legs put up. And the New York Times ran this article saying it was the prize fighter of antiquity, and you know, nothing had ever been so fierce and so wonderful. So before people even really saw what this dinosaur was, just the fact that it was this giant carnivore bigger than anything that had ever been seen just established it as the, you know, killer dinosaur of all time, and it's just had a cultural momentum ever since then. Basically, it got into museums first and was really famous, and nothing has really been able to overshadow its reputation.
Got there first and good press. And now what about the other one we mentioned, the Brontosaurus? As I understand it, that's not even a real thing anymore.
Yeah, about the time that Tyrannosaurus was going up at the AMNH, Brontosaurus was scientifically dead. A paleontologist by the name of Elmer Riggs actually figured out that the dinosaur known as Brontosaurus should properly be called Apatosaurus. That is basically a double name. It was a synonym for one that had been named a few years earlier. But for whatever reason, it just stuck in museum halls. When museums put up their own skeletons of this, you know, long-necked dinosaur properly called Apatosaurus, they used the old name for reasons that aren't entirely clear. And because that was there and because it became a kind of shorthand for the public, you know, Brontosaurus stayed on for decades in the public imagination until they found the long-lost skull of Apatosaurus in the late 1970s. The big image change finally happened. But yeah, I mean, that was, it's basically a dinosaur zombie just kind of shuffling along in museum halls until this correction was made.
Is it a thing like when they said Pluto's not a planet? Did we have a lot of very upset kids around the country clinging to the Brontosaurus?
See, most of the outcry that I've seen are actually from adults and people of my generation, and not so much. I mean, kids love it. Kids actually love the fact, like, you know, Pluto's not a planet anymore. They love to show up, adults. They love to show us up in terms of, you know, how they're really on point. It's mostly, like, a few years ago in 2010, there was a proposal that a dinosaur called Torosaurus, this three-horned, large, frail dinosaur, was the adult form of Triceratops. And Triceratops was named first. So if this was true, if Torosaurus really was the adult form of our favorite Triceratops, and Triceratops would remain the name. But there's this huge public outcry, this huge misunderstanding, thinking that paleontologists were going to take Triceratops away. And people were comparing it to Pluto, saying this is just Pluto and Brontosaurus all over again, when really that wasn't anything at all to worry about. So I think, if anything, it's us who remember our childhood dinosaurs, remember the dinosaurs that we grew up with, that get most upset about this.
Well, the piece you wrote that prompted us giving you a call is about the dinosaurs that maybe aren't the household names that we've learned a lot from. And let's just go through them in the order of how hard they are to pronounce. And if we run out the clock, I won't have to say the really hard ones. Myasaura. What have we learned from Myasaura?
Well, that dinosaurs might be good parents. I mean, Myasaura translates to, you know, caring mother lizard, and that was one of the sort of iconic aspects of this animal that was found in the late 1970s, is that it wasn't just the single skeleton or even fragments of a skeleton those paleontologists often find, is this vast nesting ground. You know, contain not only eggshell, but, you know, hatchlings, infants, all the way up through adults. And previously, dinosaurs were thought to be kind of, well, basically poor parents. They just laid the eggs and they left them and kind of left nature sort it out. This was really good evidence, especially based upon the sort of development of the juveniles, that dinosaurs were, you know, attentive and caring parents, at least early in the lives of their offspring, and caused this major image shift. And, you know, the dinosaur got a little bit of fame. I remember a children's book about it. But, you know, sort of things like The Lair of Land Before Time and other sort of films where we see the caring parent dinosaurs, that's based off of Myasaura.
And the previous thought, as you mentioned, was that dinosaurs are kind of fire and forget with their eggs. They dropped them, moved on, hope for the best.
Yeah. I mean, that still seems like it might be the case for some. Not all dinosaurs are exactly the same. I mean, we're dealing with, you know, over 1,000 different genera of animals over millions and millions of years, but at least raise the possibility that dinosaurs weren't as crummy parents as had always been believed.
Well, it seems like over time, as we find more and more fossils and fossil evidence, the story keeps getting more and more complicated as we see more dinosaurs. Obviously, there must have been diversity in their behavior, their appearance, everything about them.
Absolutely, just like the modern world today. I mean, there are lizards that live in the American Southwest that are entirely different species, but they're geographically sort of differentiated in different colors. So it's things that are that subtle that must have existed among dinosaurs as well. I mean, there are over 50 skeletons of the dinosaur that we call T-Rex going over 2 million years of history. Chances are, if we could see the living animals, if we could see them, you know, really biologically and not just through the fossil record, there might have been multiple species. They might have been differentiated by color or certain things of behavior, but we can't quite get it. That we just have the bones. But even with just the bones, you know, differentiating one species from another on the basis of, you know, anatomy, different kinds of dinosaurs that we never knew existed before, it's really, you know, it's changing in an extremely rapid clip. I mean, a new dinosaur is named, I think, on the average of every 2 weeks.
Wow.
And most of them are as yet undiscovered. So really, we're still just getting to know what dinosaurs were, much less their biology.
Well, let's get to some of the other unsung heroes. Correct me on the pronunciation, Deinonychus?
Yeah. There's a couple of variations, but that was the inspiration for Velociraptor in Jurassic Park. So Deinonychus, I guess, is the way that I usually go with it. Deinonychus also works. But this is a dinosaur that stood about as tall as the average human. It had this really distinctive switchblade claw on its foot and totally changed the image of what a dinosaur could be. This was dinosaurs found in 1969 in Montana. And at that time, dinosaurs were still kind of slow and stupid and swamp-bound and relatively drab and all that interesting. They were seen as basically larger variations of lizards, which were seen as basically as boring little reptiles. So Deinonychus, when this was discovered by paleontologist John Ostrom out of Yale, he immediately saw this could not be a slow-moving, stupid animal. It had to be active. It had all the anatomical hallmarks of an animal that was actively running down prey, probably had a hot running metabolism, was very bird-like, and provided the idea, now fact, that birds are dinosaurs. So this was really, if there's any singular dinosaur that totally changed the image of what a dinosaur was and sort of ushered in the modern image of dinosaurs, it would be Deinonychus.
And with that metabolism you mentioned, does that mean they were what we lay people would call warm-blooded?
Yeah, or at least much more like birds, which are living dinosaurs and mammals like us, than the traditional image of sort of lizards and snakes and crocodiles. For a long time, dinosaurs were just seen as larger versions of the small reptiles we see around us today. But even though sort of many things about their physiology are still a mystery, all the hallmarks that paleontologists have been able to sort of pull out of their bones point to animals that must have had some way of being incredibly fast-growing, maintaining a high and active body temperature, being, they said, much more like, you know, birds and their living dinosaurian descendants than anything that researchers expected before.
All right, another species you mentioned, Hadrosaurus?
Yeah, Hadrosaurus, that one's from my old home state of New Jersey, one of the most important dinosaurs ever found and often sort of overlooked because there's not very much of it. It was found before New Jersey kind of paved over all its fossil sites, which is a rather unfortunate thing. One of the last ones remaining is actually behind a Target off a highway, and that's the only one left from this particular era. But Hadrosaurus is one of these large herbivorous shovel-beaked hadrosaurs. It gave its name to the entire group, similar to Mosasaurus. And it was one of the first dinosaurs known from a partial skeleton. Previously, all the bones that had been found in the early to mid-19th century were just, you know, scraps of jaw, a tooth here or there, a couple limb bones, and these were all put into sort of the form of iguanas or crocodiles or other familiar reptiles. Paleontologists could tell that these were from some kind of reptile, but they had no clue what the whole thing looked like. So they kind of just made their best guess based upon living reptiles. Hadrosaurs showed that dinosaurs were something unique and totally different. And, you know, in this particular case, the hadrosaurs had shorter forelimbs than hind limbs, so it changed their ideas about posture and how they walked and how they moved, that they weren't sort of sprawling and squatting on the ground, but walking with this erect gait, and sort of was the first move to what we would consider sort of the modern image of the dinosaur.
All right, here's the one I was fearing, Cynoceropteryx. Cynoceropteryx.
You did very good. Yeah, so Cynoceropteryx. This is a little sort of chicken-sized dinosaur, and the amazing thing about it, the greatest thing, that is that it's fuzzy. It has this sort of almost mane of protofeathers running down its back. So I meant we were talking about Deinonychus a moment ago. John Ostrom and other paleontologists, on the basis of just the bones, say these dinosaurs are very, very bird-like. Maybe birds are dinosaurs. And one of the missing bits was, well, where are the feathers if birds were dinosaurs? Feathers probably evolved sometime amongst the dinosaurs. If this connection is real, where are they? Well, in 1996, Cynoceropteryx shows up and confirms that connection was really the beginning of this flood of feathery fossils coming out of China and elsewhere around the world. And the amazing thing about this is, beyond sort of confirming the bird-dinosaur connection, showing that, you know, many of them were covered in fluff and fuzz and feathers and these really weird body coverings, is that it gives us a way to finally discover dinosaur color by zooming in on these fossilized feathers and comparing them to the feathers of modern birds. Paleontologists can reconstruct what colors these dinosaurs were. And as a kid, I was always told we never ever knew that. So, you know, beyond just changing the image, it's literally changing sort of the art and the visions that we have of these animals.
So in our last minute or so, for these things that were around 65 million years ago and longer, they're changing every darn day. Why? That's got to be exciting to watch.
Oh, absolutely. It's incredibly fluid and dynamic science. And every time someone comes up with an idea, someone might dispute that or come up with another explanation or something like that. So really finding dinosaurs, the sort of Indiana Jones stuff that, you know, we love and I love to volunteer to do out in the field, that's just the beginning. Finding dinosaurs is just step one. And we're finding more and more from the remains than ever before. And every day, that's changing our image of what dinosaurs are really like.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Brian Sweetek. He's a science writer, author of My Beloved Brontosaurus. We have a link to the article he wrote about the unsung dinosaur heroes. You can find it at our Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR.